In everything I did, I showed you that by this kind of hard work we must help the weak, remembering the words the Lord Jesus himself said, "It is more blessed to give than to receive." Acts 20:35. Welcome back to Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. I'm your host, Phil Gonzalez, and this week we are closing out our Christmas coverage. We are done. This is the last week of Christmas coverage, and we are going out with a bang and a doozy, with the Berenstain Bears and the Joy of Giving from 2010. Now, last week's was from 2013, and we're jumping back a few years to 2010, but I think it's fitting because this particular book brings together a lot of the things we've already discussed as far as Christmas tradition goes, religious tradition goes, and what Christmas really means to people who celebrate it. It's the Joy of Giving. Now, obviously, this is, as you could probably tell from beginning with a Bible verse, this is another Zonderkids book from Zondervan Publishing, Living Lights series. But as with most of the Zonderkids books, it is religious in that it is using biblical stories to teach a moral lesson. And not even a moral lesson in this case. More a lesson about life. A lesson about getting along with each other and the things that we do that make other people feel good and part of a community. And that in turn make us feel good about being part of that community. And that at the very base of it, we have what the title itself talks about, which is the joy of giving, the joy of giving without expectation of reciprocity, the joy of freely, at only expense to yourself, making a gift to another person. That is what this book is about. And it sort of takes a winding little path. Unlike the last three books we talked about, this one has not only quite a bit of plot, but actually quite a bit of characterization of the bears as well. It's not a simple little parable this time. We actually get some involvement with the bears, with their community, with their teachers, with their fellow students, and we get to see a little bit more of Bear Country than we've seen so far in our podcast. So let's talk a little bit about the Berenstain Bears and the Joy of Giving. Right off the bat, we have a quote from the Bible. It is more blessed to give than to receive. I decided to go ahead and read the entire quote from Acts 20:35. For those of you who aren't familiar with this part of the Bible, the New Testament, the much shorter part of the Bible that tells a story of the life of Jesus and his teachings and then his followers and then up to and including the end of the world. The first chunk of that is the four canonical gospels, which tell the life of Jesus, more or less. Mark, Matthew, Luke, and John. And they you know, tell his tales. But there's this other guy who was a big part of the New Testament. His name was Paul. His name used to be Saul of Tarsus. He was walking down he's a pretty bad dude, walking down the road one day, and he went blind. He says he saw Jesus, and he decided to start spreading his word and teaching. And Paul became kind of the foundation of churches, not Christianity, but the idea of having these institutions in every city that taught an identical form of a religion that was sort of overseen by a central body, and it kind of went against, you know, what people thought of as proper for religions at the time. You sort of, like, your community sort of developed their own version of whatever belief system was being passed about. But Paul came along and was like, no, we're gonna structure this. We're going to solidify the teachings. And what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna have people reporting back to me with how your church is doing. And then I'm gonna keep in contact with all the churches and chastise you when you're not doing things correctly. And to this end, Paul wrote a bunch of letters, epistles, to each of these churches. And that's a lot of what you see in the New Testament is the letters of Paul. A lot of them are attributed to Paul, but biblical scholars, you know, over time have been like, this was probably written by a follower of Paul, because there's things in here that he couldn't have known because he was dead before this one came out. In any case, that's Paul in a nutshell. But he also wrote this book. There's also this book called The Acts of the Apostles, and it's kind of like the continuing adventures of the apostles of Jesus Christ that cover kind of what happened with them, with his followers after he, you know, after the whole, like, death and resurrection thing. And so this quote at the beginning comes from the Acts of the Apostles. I have showed you all things, how that so laboring ye ought to support the weak, and to remember the words of the Lord Jesus, how he said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. And that's the quote that a lot of people pull out when they're talking about, you know, at the heart of everything, at the heart of all human kindness is the notion that we will gain the greatest sense of peace within ourselves and the greatest coming together of our community if we all learned to give more than we expect to receive in return. That's the heart of it. And I don't think that's even a singularly Christian thing. It's definitely not a singularly Christian thing to believe. That is a very human ideal that we are only here and only successful because of the amount that we are willing to give to each other. And that is giving not only material goods, food, shelter, clothing, but also art, things that make us happy, things that make people feel worthwhile in their lives, and also gifts such as kindness and understanding and compassion. These are gifts as well. These are things that we should give freely without expecting people to give them back in return. It's nice to get them back. It sure is. You know, if you spend your whole life giving and giving and giving and never getting anything in return, that can be demoralizing. And it also means that people aren't doing their jobs. That is the gift of gift giving. That is the gift of giving. And like I said at the beginning, that is the heart of this book. So it starts off with that quote. That's a pretty solid place to begin because no matter which gospel you read in the New Testament, there is that at the heart of each one, no matter which version of Jesus's life story, they all kind of come back around to that basic concept. Maybe not so much like John all the time. He may not have been as big on that all the time. But the other three did a pretty good job at talking about Jesus in that way. Any case, let's get on with what this book is actually about, because I really enjoy this one. So this is it's all about Bear Country. It's week before Christmas, and everyone's bustling about getting ready to celebrate the day, the big day. There's decorations going up. There's Christmas sales everywhere. There's trees are being trimmed in the town square. This is our first time we in this show have been to the Chapel in the Woods. Chapel in the Woods is a tiny little church that the Bears worship at, and it looks like your suburban church. It's got a couple of nice entrances. It's got your steeple. And the Cubs are getting ready to put on their Christmas pageant. The Story of the First Christmas is what it's called. And brother and sister are super excited about their part. I love this. Brother and Sister Bear are playing the Camel of the Three Wise Bears. I believe I mentioned in the last episode that I'm sure the Three Wise Men were called the Three Wise Bears in this. And yes, they were. And brother and sister are going to play their camel, which is a delight. It's basically a pantomime horse, except they're a camel. Sister is the front, brother's the rear end, because of course he is. And they think it is this the greatest costume in the world. So we meet Mrs. Ursula, who is the Sunday school teacher. She's a little older. I never went to Sunday school on the regular, but I did go to Sunday school whenever I spent the night at my father's parents' house. My sister and I would sometimes spend Saturday night there. And if we were there on Saturday night, come Sunday morning, we had to get up and go to church. We were not a church-going family otherwise. But when we were at Grandma's, we called her Mama. It was Mama and Papa. When we were at their house, we had to go to church on a Sunday morning. And that usually just meant go to Sunday school. And for me, Sunday school was like, we don't expect you to sit in church and do the church thing. So here, cut some things out of construction paper and kind of learn a story. And one of my favorite, if you've known me for a long time, you may have heard this story, but one of my favorite Sunday. So because I didn't regularly go to Sunday school, I was always just kind of a drop-in student. Like if you go to Sunday school or you teach Sunday school, you're familiar with Sunday schools or, you know, Hebrew school or any kind of religious like weekend or week, like one night a week or two nights a week school, it's a community because it's a curriculum and kids are learning things. And so if one kid just sort of like unexpectedly drops in from out of nowhere and is never seen again, that's got to be weird for everyone. So I went to a Sunday school once, and they were teaching the story of Jonah, who is one of the prophets from the Old Testament. And in the story of Jonah, you may have heard it, he God's like, you got to do a thing. And Jonah's like, I don't want to do a thing. And so God's like, run if you want, but I'm going to get you. And Jonah gets on a boat and he tries to sail away to get away. And he falls overboard, yada, yada, yada. He gets swallowed by a giant fish. And then he's like, so I'm sorry for everything I did. That was bad of me. That was bad. thing that I did, what with you being God and all. And God's like, no harm, no foul, has the fish spit Jonah out onto the shore. And then the story of Jonah continues. I'm not going to go into it. However, when we learned the story in this Sunday school class, our teacher sort of did it that way. She was like, and then Jonah said, no, I don't want to do this thing. So he gets on a boat and there's a big storm and he falls overboard. And he gets swallowed by a giant fish. She probably said whale. People always say whale. He gets swallowed by this giant fish. And he tells God that he's sorry. And God's like, I'll give you another chance. And so and I swear I'm not making this up. And so she's sort of like breezing through this tale, as you do in a children's class. Like, you don't, doesn't want to get too heavy. So she's like, and so God had the fish throw Jonah up, and the fish vomited him forth. And it was, and Jonah washed up on shore, and he was covered in bits of other fish and bile and throw up and slime and gook and she's really describing this fish's vomit to us. And I remember just sitting there in this class being like, I don't think that's the point of the story. I don't know if they included it in the Bible because they just wanted us to be grossed out. But I mean, it's your class, I guess, whatever floats your boat. And that's really all I took away from that class. And I think we had to cut out giant fish was the project associated with it. And then I went home and I never went back to that class because that's my Sunday school experience. But in any case, Mrs. Ursula is a Sunday school teacher, and she is a Sunday school teacher right out of Central Casting. She's got a little glasses that sit on your nose with like a chain leading down. She's got her hair up in a bun. She's an older bear. You can tell because her eyes are at half mast, which is how we indicate older bears in bear country. And she's got a little bit of a wrinklier mouth. So Mrs. Ursula. Three wise bears come out. They're rehearsing the play. And we meet Sammy Bruno, which I assume is Babs Bruno's brother. Sammy Bruno is the first wise bear. And he has a loose tooth, so he's like, a thar, I see a thar. And then brother and sister knock over part of the set, and rehearsal ends. But I want to talk a little bit about, so they're doing the nativity play. This is you know, the night of the story of the first Christmas, as it's called, the nativity play. And this is a mash-em-up story. It's a mash-up of the two gospels that discuss the birth of Jesus, the Gospel of Matthew and the Gospel of Luke. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with the Gospels, they tell the same story more or less, but there's a lot of contradictions, a lot of differences. They focus on different things, and only the Gospels of Luke and Matthew really care about Jesus' birth. And the way they present the Jesus' birth, the birth of Jesus, are contradictory. And so none of the Gospels really agree on where Jesus was born, or if they do, why he was born there. Because there's the whole, like, Bethlehem and Nazareth thing. Well, is he Jesus of Nazareth, or is he Jesus of Bethlehem? Well, maybe he lived in Nazareth, but then he had to go to Bethlehem. Or maybe he was born in Bethlehem, and they all moved to Nazareth. But then why did they go to Egypt? And it was a lot of, like, conversation, let's say, around the birth of Jesus. These nativity stories were only important later on in Christianity. A lot of Jesus's followers were like, it's not really about the birth, it's about the death and resurrection. I mean, Paul was all about the death and resurrection. You want to read over the letters of Paul, not a whole lot about Jesus's teachings in those letters of Paul, but a lot of things about the death and resurrection and what it means to, like, really believe in Jesus, and also how to run your church, and also stop screwing up churches. I'm Paul, and I'm trying to whip you into shape. The world's going to end in 30 years. Oh, yeah, Paul also kind of believed that the world was about to end, which is why he was so persnickety and always trying to get the, you know, just shape up. Just do what I say, and because the world's coming to an end. It was a lot of apocalyptic thought back in the day. In any case, so the Gospels of Matthew, Gospel of Luke. So one thing that the Gospel of Matthew has that the Gospel of Luke doesn't have is espionage and intrigue. So in Matthew, there's Herod the Great, who was, at the time, he was like the Roman king. He was the Roman king of Judea, or client king, as they called him, in the Herodian kingdom. He's not the other Herod, or not the other Herod. He's just this Herod. He's Herod the Great. He's a great Herod, for whatever it's worth. And in the Gospel of Matthew, he sends spies out. Because there's these guys called the Magi, and the Magi were, as far as we can probably surmise, Zoroastrian priests. Like, they were astrologers in the Zoroastrian tradition, and They didn't do magic. That wasn't what the priests did. Zoroastrians were kind of against the whole idea of sorcery, but they did read the stars. And in this gospel tradition, they were like, hey, there's this star. We should go check it out. And Herod's like, tell me everything about it when you come back. So the magi, these wise men, travel to where the astrological charts are leading them, according to the star. And they find this house. And in the house is a baby who's been born at some point. And they're like, this must be the Messiah. And they like kneel down and they give him some gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. And then an angel comes to them and is like, don't tell Herod about this because the prophecies, and they say that like this is the baby that's going to like be the new king of the Jews. And we don't want Herod to find out. So just keep it mum. So the magi are like, right. And Herod was like, all right, well, then we'll just kill every baby that was born in the last 2 years because that was, you know, since I don't know which one it is. And thanks, you know, magi, that didn't work out so well for everyone else. But then that's why Jesus and his family flee to Egypt to get away from all this, the slaughter of the innocents. Fun story, not so much. But in any case, that's the only time you hear about the Magi is in gospel, Matthew's gospel. And there's not three of them, just so you know. And they're also not kings, just so you know. And they're also not named Melchior, Balthazar, and Caspar. That's not a thing. That was a tradition from like a few centuries later. There was this writing about the three kings, and they were like, oh yeah, these are Melchior, Balthazar, and Caspar, and they were like, who are those guys? And then traditions formed around those, and eventually they were like sainted, even though no one really knows who those people were. It was weird. There were not three magi. There were any number of magi. Some Christian traditions say 12, but we don't know. And they also weren't kings. That was a thing that came later. So there's a lot of things in the story of Jesus that are sort of retrofitted to prophecies from the Old Testament that may not have been prophecies at all. It's really complicated, but people said things in the Old Testament, and there's a certain way to read passages from the Old Testament, no matter how innocuous they are, particularly ones about, like, say, King David. People read them and they're like, oh, we'll just pull this line out. And that could be a prophecy about Jesus, because Jesus is supposed to be a descendant of King David. And so there was one that said, like, this Messiah or whoever is kings will bow down to him. Well, when the Magi showed up, they bowed down to the baby. So they were retroactively referred to as kings, because they bowed down, so they must have been kings, even though they weren't kings. They were priests, Zoroastrian priests. But that's how prophecy works. So then you can say, see, the kings bowed down. And people are like, they weren't kings. And you can say, we call them kings, so now they are. So that's the whole three kings thing. But again, only in the Gospel of Matthew. Only in the Gospel of Matthew. Also, as you noticed, not at a manger, at a house, because Matthew doesn't say when the three kings showed up, just says they did, probably within 2 years of Jesus' birth, because it would have taken them a while to get there, well, with the star and all. And why else would Herod have been like, kill all the babies born within 2 years? Like, that just doesn't make any sense. So in any case, that's that tradition. So that's what we're seeing, the three bear cubs enacting the age-old misunderstood tradition of the three wise bears, bears in this one. Set falls over. We don't know if they had a camel. That's just tradition. So, Christmas is coming. Things are getting cold. No snow on the ground yet in Bear Country, which I find interesting. But everything's looking pretty Christmassy around. And speaking of Christmas, time to go to the mall. I haven't even been to the mall yet this year. Just for everyone listening, I should probably get on that. Buy some presents for my family. Be a good idea. But the Cubs have been given two crisp $10 bills from Grizzly, Gramps, and Gran to spend on others. And so what I love is that Brother Bear is shopping for Sister, and Sister Bear is shopping for Brother. The idea in their head, though, is that they'll spend only enough to buy something for their sibling and then spend the rest of the money on themselves. I love it. I love that idea. It's very much, that is a very kid thing to do. Sister wants a new Barbie. Brother wants a new model airplane. So Brother buys Sister the cheapest Barbie outfit he can find. Sister buys Brother the cheapest airplane model she can find, and walk home very proud of themselves. The parents are a little concerned that the kids are like not really being that generous, but they are the Berenstain Bears, and they realize they are in a Berenstain Bears book, and that they will probably learn about the joy of giving all by themselves. That's literally what Papa says. They'll learn about the joy of giving for themselves. Trust me, we've been here before. So the Cubs are getting more and more excited about Christmas. Play rehearsal's going well. They fix their costumes so they don't bump into everything. And then on Christmas Eve, it's time for the big pageant. And we get the angel Gabriel showing up, which I love because the book we just read talked about Gabriel, but that book came after this book. So shouldn't they have known about Gabriel? I don't know. We don't know who's playing Gabriel. We don't know who's playing Mary. I really wish they had, you know, filled us in on that. But let's just say that Mary is being played by Babs Bruno. Played by Babs Bruno. And that Gabriel's being played by Massive Milton. Let's just say Massive Milton. In any case, Joseph and Mary are going to Bethlehem. The innkeeper's like, I can put you up in the stable. She gives birth. We get a nice little tableau. We see a bunch of cubs dressed as sheep. The wise bears come on. The star comes out. They're mashing up these stories quite a bit. Quite a bit. Because a lot of times the shepherds recognizing Jesus as the new king is conflated with the story of the wise men. That's why you think the wise men were there with the shepherds, but they just sort of mush them together. A nativity scene is kind of a greatest hits of Jesus's birth. So just keep that in mind, that when you see a nativity scene, it's supposed to be this sort of almost Picasso-esque view of time. Let's see something that took place over even several years in one tableau. That's your nativity scene. It's just to give you the idea of it. So they're all kneeling, bowing. Jesus opens his presents. He doesn't really open his presents. That'd be weird because he's a baby. You're like, if you have a little arm come out and thanks. In any case, this is weird. While they're all bowing, some rando bear stands up in the audience and starts singing Silent Night. And the audience joins in. I think that bear was a plant. I think that bear was planted. I don't think he was a plant, a physical plant. I think he was planted in the audience by the church. Stand up, Joe, and just start singing Silent Night. Everyone will follow along. In any case, they all start singing Silent Night, Holy Night, All is Calm, All is Bright. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with this song, Silent Night is a Christmas carol. And Christmas carols go back to the 4th century. They're just songs about Christmas, if you were wondering. Because songs about Christmas. Or the Christmas season. Or adjacent to Christmas. We'll be discussing another one momentarily. But a Silent Night came from 1818. And it was actually a German song called Stille Nacht. Still, just stop right there. I'm not going to do the rest of the... I don't know. German, but translated as Silent Night, Holy Night by Franz Xaver Gruber with lyrics by Joseph Moore in the small town of Oberndorf bei Salzburg in Austria. Actually, an Austrian carol, which is, I think it's fascinating. It was first performed, though, on Christmas Eve in 1818. So it's a Christmas, not only a Christmas carol, but it is a Christmas Eve carol, which I think makes it a little even more appropriate that the bears would be singing it on this night. So, we don't know much about why it was written, but we do know where and when and by whom it was written. And then it sort of spread across the world. It just became more and more popular as it was published, and then it was sold, and then it was translated into different languages. But the English translation that we all sing was actually done in 1859. So that means that at some point in Bear world history, Bear's version of Austria had a Christmas carol called Silent Night, not in English, a different language. And actually, here's something I found interesting when I was doing my research, just reading up on this. In 1998, the Silent Night Museum, which is a thing in Austria, by the way, there's a Silent Night Museum, commissioned new English lyrics for the original German lyrics. And I find that fascinating that there would be almost 200 years have gone by, and they're like, we're not happy with these lyrics. That was done a little off the cuff. So let's get something new. So for example, the original lyrics that were translated "Round yon virgin, mother and child, holy infant, so tender and mild," are now were then reworded as "Round yon godly tender pair, holy infant, with curly hair, which apparently is closer to what the original said. But that's dumb. I don't like that lyric at all. I'd rather hear about a tender and mild infant than some curly-haired kid, because that doesn't mean anything to me. But I do love tender and mild children. So, yeah, been using a lot of movies. That's Silent Night that the bear stands up and sings. Everyone joins in and starts weeping, and so do the cubs. And here's what's cool. So the cubs are like, you know what? It is better to give than to receive, which is kind of a weird thing to take from Silent Night, because that's not what Silent Night's about at all. But they see the Magi giving these gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh, and those are symbolic in some way. I'm not even going to bore you with that. But the gold, the frankincense and myrrh, they meant things to the people when the story was originally told. And so the next morning, Christmas morning, the cubs are excited not to open their own gifts, but to give each other their gifts. Still super cheap gifts, by the way. They didn't go back and return their presents or anything. They're still just like, here's this cheap thing I bought you. But they're happy with what they got. That's the point. Like, they're just like, hooray, thank you so much for the gifts. But, and I love that this is added, is that they're still just like, but I still got mine, because I still got that money left over. Like, it's still in the back of their heads. So they go to the chapel in the woods for the Christmas Day service. By this point, snow has fallen. Everything is great. And they pass by a charity band. It's not the Salvation Army, although it pretty much is the Salvation Army. There's like a pot and everything. But they pass a charity band collecting money for the needy. And brother and sister are like, you know what? Christmas Day, they just toss the rest of their money in that pot. And they walk on. And that's when Mama's like, you know what the good book says. And I really wish she hadn't done that, because they just said the kids are going to learn about this for themselves. But it is more blessed to give than to receive. And brother says, you know what? We receive an awful lot, so it's time we give some of it back. Then sister finds an extra quarter, gives it to honey. Honey drops it in the pot, and everyone says Merry Christmas to us, the reader. Now, giving being better than receiving is not a strictly Christmas thing. It is not a strictly Christian thing. It is a sentiment observed the world yon within all kinds of traditions, religious and otherwise. The notion of collecting money for the poor dates back well before Christianity. Judaism has a whole entire tradition built around giving rather than receiving. So it's not even a specifically, it doesn't even have to be confined to Christmas books. I think it's interesting that we wait until the Christmas book to discuss the joys of giving to other people, the pleasures, the small pleasure of seeing someone's face light up when you've given them a gift. Now, Christmas gifts, the gifts themselves come from different parts of Christmas tradition, and we've covered some of them. The tradition of exchanging items in the wintertime is pre-Christian, is pre-Christmas, pre-Christian. It goes back to like the Saturnalia holiday when people would exchange gifts in Rome. But there's a lot of different gift traditions that kind of fed into the Christmas tradition. And what is interesting is, so like, you have the Magi who gave the gifts. So that's already established. But what's funny is, traditionally, in early Christianity, early Christian rulers were like, let's all be like the Magi. The Magi gave gifts to their kings, so that means that you need to give gifts to your betters. So the tradition originally was that you were supposed to give gifts to people who had more than you, because, hey, that's what they did in the Bible. And it wasn't until good King Wenceslas, Saint Wenceslas, started becoming more and more of a cult figure, like literally the cult of Wenceslas was a thing, that the idea that you should probably give to the poor and to people who had less than you started becoming a Christian thing. I find that eminently enjoyable, a nice little idea, the idea that it took them a while to figure out the whole giving and receiving thing. We're not going to get into Saint Wenceslas. That's a gory tale. You know that you're in for a treat when their Wikipedia page has a heading just called murder. There's a lot of that in the Wenceslas story. It's a Game of Thrones-esque tale, but long and short of it, he was killed by his brother and some conspirators. He was immediately sainted and was not a king. He was a duke, I think. The actual Wenceslas was, yes, he was a Duke of Bohemia. And later on, like much later on, they were like, you know what? Guy was a king. We're going to give him a kingship. We're going to make him a king. And that's why he's called King Wenceslas. He was never a king in his life. It was kind of like the Magi was never a king. But they decided the story worked better if he was a king. But he was known for giving to the poor. That's what the song Good King Wenceslas is about. It's tied into Christmas carols again. Good King Wenceslas. You've all heard it. You don't know the words, though. You don't know them. You know the opening line, which is, Good King Wenceslas looked out on the feast of Stephen as the snow lay round about Crispin something Stephen or something. I don't know the words. Because you get lost right at the very beginning when you're like, well, I don't know what the feast of Stephen is. That's because it's not a Christmas carol. It's not a Christmas carol. It's a St. Stephen's Day carol. And St. Stephen's Day is like, what, the 28th, I think? St. Stephen's Eve is the 27th of December and the 28th. But gift giving was a part of that as well. So you have all these gift giving traditions. You have the Good King Wenceslas tradition of gift giving. You have the Magi tradition of gift giving. You have the old Saturnalia traditions of gift giving. And you have the, as we talked about before, the St. Nicholas tradition of gift giving. And also like New Year's gift giving, which is a thing. So you have all these things kind of orbiting around December, particularly late December. And people were still giving gifts on December 6th or in New Year's Eve. And it wasn't until about like the late 1700s, early 1800s until the end of the 19th century, that the idea of exchanging Christmas gifts on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day was kind of hammered home. Like it was kind of like, boom, there we go. But reading about it, it was fascinating that the idea of giving gifts was also tied into the rowdiness of Christmas, that Christmas was seen in a lot of places as kind of a bad time to be out. Yeah, there was a lot of revelry tied into the Father Christmas tradition. It was a time to eat, drink, and be merry. There was rowdiness out there. You had the people dressed up as demons in some countries. You had people dressed up as soot-covered chimney sweeps in some countries, going out creating havoc, and the exchange of gifts, like formalizing the exchange of gifts, was seen in some places as a good way to keep people off the streets, keep you at home. If you were promised a trinket or a toy, you wouldn't leave. You'd stay at home. And so that sort of helped solidify what it meant to give gifts on Christmas. Christmas stopped being a time to go out and smash up people's yards, and started being about a time to sit around the hearth and tell stories and drink some Nog and be with your family or your friends and exchange gifts. Gifts were a way to kind of calm people down. But it was also a time to give and to receive a little bit in return. But that's kind of where the gift giving of Christmas came about. And everyone has their different gift-giving traditions. You may give your gifts on Christmas Eve. You may give your gifts on Christmas Day. You may give one gift on Christmas Eve. Or you may indulge in the full 12 days of Christmas. Now, most people don't fully participate in the 12 days of Christmas anymore. The 12 days of Christmas are the 12 days following Christmas. In some traditions, it includes Christmas. But in a lot of traditions, Christmas is still part of the Advent, so you don't want to like mix those two things up. But the next day, I misspoke when I said that St. Stephen's Day was the 28th. It was 26th, because then, okay, so then you start on St. Stephen's Day, the day after Christmas. Thus begins your 12 days of Christmas, leading up through like January, 5th at this point? So people sometimes think that 12 days lead up to Christmas, but that's impossible because that's, again, Advent. So you have these 12, and let's not confuse this with Christmas time. Christmastide, which is also a church thing that starts after Christmas, which is, I think, a Catholic thing. So there's, if you want to celebrate the 12 days of Christmas, go right ahead. But that's like a whole other holiday, right? Like, this is not Christmas. This is the day after Christmas. But in any case, there's this song called The 12 Days of Christmas, which involve giving a gift on each of the 12 days. And that's a whole other gift-giving tradition. So if you do the gift-giving tradition of the 12 days of Christmas, there's also 12th night. Is that related to the 12 days of Christmas? I think it is. Is that the last one? That's the last one, right? You have like Boxing Day or St. Stephen's Day, and then you have 12th night. That's, yeah, that's... There's also Epiphany. That's another thing, right? Do you give gifts on Epiphany? What about on Epiphany Tide? Christmas Tide, 12th Night Epiphany. You know what? This is way too much for one episode of Deep in Bear Country. I'm doing a podcast about the Berenstain Bears. You know what's complicated? Religion is. You know what's not complicated? The Berenstain Bears and the Joy of Giving from 2010. What have we learned from this book? We learned it's better to give than to receive. We learned that 10 bucks can go a long way. You can buy a gift for your brother or sister, and you can give a little sweet in the pot at the for the charity. We've learned that the bears know well enough at this point to just leave the kids alone, that they'll figure out the lesson for themselves. No need to lecture Mama Bear, because the kids have heard it. They've heard it all. They've literally heard everything you have to offer at this point. And we learned that that Bear Country is very active as far as their religious life. That there's a lot of bears out there. We also learned that Babs Bruno has a brother, Sammy Bruno, and that he lost his tooth in this book, 2010. The Berenstain Bears and the Joy of Giving is written by Jan and Mike Berenstain. This is a Jan and Mike book, and it is delightfully illustrated, as all these Christmas books have been. It's nicely colored. It's very active. The pages are very vibrant, and there's a lot of good movement in the way the characters are drawn and in the details behind them at the toy store. I have it on digital, but this might be one, if it's available, that you'll want to pick up physical copy of, because you lose a little something in the digital edition. The way it's presented, there's a lot of good, cool wraparound pages that where the text and the images sort of complement each other from page to page, and you lose out on that in the digital version, that where the images are kind of chopped up and spread around, and you have like big like blank spaces in the pictures where the words would normally go. Whereas some of these books benefit from the digital transfer because you get to see a lot of cool splash pages, this book is not splash page heavy. So I would pick it up, if you want to pick it up, as a physical copy. It is still in print, still readily available, and it's a good-looking book. It's a good-looking Living Lights book. Again, this is a religious one, my friends. So if that's not what you want on your bookshelf, don't pick up a copy. But if it is what you want, if you're cool with that, again, it's a Christmas book. Then go ahead. It's not too preachy. Brother and sister are likable characters in it, and they are characters in it. You get to see them interact. Honey kind of does a thing, which I like. She's not intrusive, but she's there, and she does a thing at the end, kind of like put a little bow on the story. Mama is in her vest, so we know that Mike had a hand in this. And, I mean, obviously he had a hand in this. It has his name right on the front. But it's a good book. It's a good book that I really enjoyed. And you know what else I have really enjoyed? I've really enjoyed this Christmas season of books. I've really enjoyed looking at Berenstain Bear books out of continuity, just theming these last few weeks to Christmas and getting to know the Bear family as they will be in, a little ways down the line. I was talking with Alana about this. She brought up the fact that she's enjoyed sort of giving these, like, getting this long view look at the way the bears developed. Because, as she pointed out, when you're seeing something change from moment to moment, you don't necessarily notice the changes happening. But when you do a big leap, you're sort of thrown into this new version of these characters, you know, and you can really see the development. You can really see where the art goes, where the story goes, how the publishing goes. And looking at these books over the last month, I've really just learned a lot about their development as how they approach religion, as how they approach the holidays, as how Mike approached the drafting of the books, the layout, the characters, the coloring. So, it's been a lot of fun. It's been really fun just taking a look at these four Berenstain Bear books. Now, the question is, how would I rank them? We have The Joy of Giving, we have The Christmas Angel, we have The Nutcracker, and we have Night Before Christmas. So, on a scale of 1 to 4, because there's only four of them that I talked about in the last month, I would probably put The Joy of Giving and The Christmas Angel at the top. They're very complimentary books, as far as I'm concerned. They also have the most plot and theme. Like, they're thematically cool. I would put maybe The Nutcracker next, and then The Night Before Christmas, even though I did like The Night Before Christmas a lot. I think The Nutcracker had the most lavish illustrations, and I really appreciated that. But again, they are four very cool books. I would definitely add them to your Berenstain Bears bookshelf if you are so inclined. And I think that will do it for the Christmas season. I think we're done, because next weekend it's not Christmas anymore, unless we count the 12 days of Christmas. I don't know if I'm up for that. So thank you all for this last month. Thank you all for seeing me out to the end of another year. We're at more than 3.5 years of this, my friends. We are barreling towards the 4-year mark, and there's more in store. There's more in store. So thank you for sticking with me if you've stuck with me all this time as I discuss these kooky bears and this kooky bear family. Thank you for supporting me. Thank you, those of you who are supporters over on Patreon. Thank you for those who follow me on Twitter. Thank you for those who follow me on Facebook. Thank you to all my friends who listen. Thank you all the strangers, especially, who listen, who have no reason to care one thing about what I'm doing, except that you find it interesting. Thank you for making my holidays merry and bright. And I hope as you go into the new year, life treats you well. I hope that if you're having hard times, they get a little less hard. I hope that if you're having great times, they stay great. I hope that for each of you, you make new friends and you enjoy the friends you have. I hope that you all learn new things. I hope that you all are able to experience the joy of giving to someone else and the joy of seeing someone's face as they give to you. I hope that you're able to patch stuff up with someone who you've been meaning to patch things up with. And I hope that you don't have any horrible falling outs with anyone you don't want horrible falling outs with. I hope you watch some good TV, some good movies, and especially, hope you all read some great books this coming year. Because there's always more to read, and we're never going to get to it all. But we'll keep plugging away. I'm never going to get to all these Berenstain Bear books, but I'm going to keep plugging away. If you'll keep listening, I'll keep putting them out. So have a happy new year, everyone, and I'll see you all next year deep in Bear Country.